7:01. Should we start? We have everybody here.
Yeah, everybody's here. We got everybody. Okay. Just working through some connection stuff.
You tell me when you're ready, Mark.
Hold on a second. All right, I think you're good, Chuck.
Great. Right. Good evening. I'd like to call the December 1st, 2020 Lower Frederick Township Board of Supervisors General Meeting to order. Time is 7:01. Mark, can you just give the overview about how the public can participate in this meeting?
Yep. If any public would like to make any comments when asked for, you can raise your hand. Under the participants, there's a raise your hand button, and we will call on you to make your comment. You can send me an email at manager@lowerfrederick.org. You can call the township phone number, and I have that forwarded to my cell phone here. And you could also use the chat feature and send a chat to me, and I can read that, or, you know, unmute you. We'll do whatever we can to get you so that you can make your comments.
Great, thank you. And I don't believe that we had any executive sessions between last week and tonight, so there's nothing Correct. To announce there. Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all.
For all. Great, thank you. Announcements are standard announcements. The township meetings are recorded for the purpose of preparing the minutes, and the recording is destroyed 6 months after the minutes are approved. This meeting is being recorded by our teleconference provider, which is Zoom. For those residents who do participate in the meeting, we do ask them to, we ask residents to identify themselves and also their address. And that way we can make sure that your name and your address are accurately reflected in the minutes along with your comments. Thank you. Mark, first item is an update on Zieglerville Road home heating oil release.
Yep. So last week I updated you that they had DEP had went up to visit Mr. Hockle to get him to sign, and they were not able to do that, and they were starting the legal procedures to access the property over the holiday weekend. Mr. Hockle was found deceased in his property. And the county coroner come up and the state police were there. So Mr. Hockle has passed away. I did alert DEP and Peter and the code enforcement. So at this point, I don't know what that means for anything. I'm still working through that with everyone. So we are working on that, but at this moment, Mr. Hockle has passed away. On that property.
Mark, did the coroner provide a cause of death?
I have not heard yet. Paul, did you hear cause of death?
No, I haven't. We're waiting for the report. We should have it probably by tomorrow.
And do we know who found him?
We don't. We knew very little details of the situation, but I'm expecting to get a full report from Skip Ack. Which is, they were waiting for some results to come back, but we should have it by tomorrow. And I can get that out to the board.
Well, I know there's been a lot going on at this property, but it's never a good day for Lower Frederick when we lose one of our residents. So if we can all just, you know, think of Mr. Hockle, and over the holiday was also a tough time. So, thanks. If you can give us more information, that would be helpful.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Any other questions, I guess, from the public on this item? Okay. Moving on, administrative actions, approval of minutes. We have two sets of minutes to approve. One is from our general meeting on October the 6th, 2020, and the other is from our workshop meeting on October the 27th, 2020. If it's acceptable to the board, can we just do them all in one motion?
Sure.
Okay, so can we have a motion to approve the minutes from October 6th, 2020 and October 27th, 2020? I'll make the motion. Chuck Yizer makes the motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Is there any discussion? So Chuck Yizer's made the motion. Noelle Halter has seconded. All in favor of approving the minutes from October 6th, 2020 and October 7th, 27th, 2020, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any against? Motion carries unanimously. Thanks. Mark, Treasurer's Report.
Okay, Treasurer's Report for December. The cash balance in the general fund as of November 30th is $1,557,283.31. The cash balance in the sewer fund as of November 30th is $355,172.20. The list of checks in front of the board in the general fund total $81,018.75. The list of checks in the sewer fund total $26,114.60. The list of checks in the liquid fuels fund total $50,473.03. During the month of November, we worked on the 2021 budget. Earned income tax through November 30th, 2020, the cumulative difference between 2020 and 2019 is actually only $846.23. That is less than a 1% decrease in our 2020 revenue over our 2019 revenue in total EIT. So our EIT is actually coming in much, much better than expected. We feel that we'll reach our 2020 budget numbers and feel very confident about our 2021 budget projection at this time. If things continue how they are. I know things have gotten a little worse with the COVID, but we seem to be leveled out and doing our normal in our EIT collections. And our November EIT actually came in stronger in 2020 than it had in 2019. We were actually, like $6,000 or $7,000 more collected in November of this year than we were in November of 2019. That's all I have.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Any questions for Mark?
Mark, I'm just curious, do you have any explanation for that? Because I know we didn't expect that.
No, I mean, we've been told, the only thing I can say is we have a lot of new residents coming in with all the houses selling. So I don't know if there's some difference in, economics there. No, I don't. we tried to have this conversation this afternoon too, and we're like,
yeah,
you know, we're doing what everyone's telling you. All the financial people, the tax collectors are telling you to plan for less, but right now we're doing okay. So we're going to cross our fingers and hope that continues for us.
Any other questions for Mark? So we need to do an approval of a list of checks if there are no other questions. So we have three lists, right? General fund, sewer fund, and liquid fuels.
Yep.
Can we do that in one motion? Is that acceptable for the board?
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So can we have a motion to approve the list of checks in the general fund, the sewer fund, and the liquid fuels fund?
This is Dan Orff. I make a motion to
for the checks to be provided for the general fund, sewer fund, and liquid fuels fund. Hopefully I said that the right way.
I'll second.
Right. So Dan Orff made the motion. Marla Hexter seconds. Is there any further discussion on this item? Hearing none, all in favor of paying, of approving the list of checks in the three funds that Dan Orff stated, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any against? Motion carries unanimously. Great. Personnel. So under personnel, we're discussing the police contract, and I have a statement to read that's similar to what we did for Chief Maxey. The Lower Frederick Township Board of Supervisors entered into discussions with the Lower Frederick Township Police Department regarding a new employment agreement beginning January 2021 and covering a period of 5 years. The police department's current employment agreement is set to expire on December 31st of this year. The township and the police department have come to a mutual agreement regarding salaries, benefits, and job expectations. These items have been formalized in the form of a new contract agreement. I would like to put forward a motion that this Board of Supervisors accept the employment agreement drafted between Lower Frederick Township and its police department beginning January 1st, 2021 and continuing through December 31st, 2025. So I'm making the motion that we, I guess, approve the contract that has been negotiated between the township and our police department.
I'll second.
So Chuck Geiser made a motion. Noelle Halter seconds. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the new contract with the Lower Frederick Police Department, say aye.
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 Any against? Great. Motion carries unanimously. Appreciate working with the police department. I know, you know, there was some back and forth as you would always expect, but it seemed like everybody came to the table and, you know, negotiated in good faith from what I could tell. And thank you, Mark, for being the leader and going back and forth with both sides and understanding the issues thoroughly. Okay, next agenda item is public comment on agenda items.
I'm not seeing anything.
Okay. We'll move on to reports, starting with a township engineer. Carol's got to get unmuted. Something's wrong with the audio.
Yep.
I've never heard that one before.
Her house is filled with helium.
Carol, can you try talking again? You were
like, that any making, better?
That is better, much better.
That's so much better.
Technology, it's a wonderful thing.
Hold on one second. We have Heidi and Rob Brown put their hand up. I don't know if we missed them under. Go ahead, Heidi or Rob. Heidi or Rob, are you there? You're unmuted. Oh, now you're muted. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, can you hear me now?
Yep, yeah, we can hear you, yes.
I'm sorry. This is Heidi Brown from 214 Zieglerville Road. I just have a question. You said that you talked to DEP about Ed Hockel passing away.
Yes, I alerted them to that. They were going to get back to me, and I have not heard back from them as of today.
Okay, so because I was just wondering what the, you know, obviously the next plan of action is. I mean, we just concerned. We had a big rain yesterday. We still have a mess out front, a mess, you know, next door. I did see a truck there yesterday, a tow truck. Are they removing stuff from the property?
That's more information than I have.
There were people on the property yesterday. There was a big tow truck. There were people going up back. My concern is now that, you know, there were, you know, kids and such going up there. And there's lots of other unstable structures on that property. Just a lot of concerns. And I just want to make sure that we are on top of it. You know, we got to get something resolved here. This has been going on for quite a while.
As soon as I hear back from DEP, I will let you know. If you see people on that property again, if you could call down to the township building so we can try to figure out who is there. I know the sister was alerted passing.
It was a big flatbed tow truck, it looked like to me.
Okay. Yeah, if you see someone on there again, if you could give us a call or give obviously the police are very familiar with the situation and Mr. Hockel. So if you could give the police a call and we'll come out and, you know, see who's there.
Absolutely. And then my next question is, how long are we going to wait for DEP to call back?
I hope to hear back from them this week, or I'll call them back this week. Today got very busy.
Okay. And you'll give us a call and let us know of any updates with that?
Yep. Yep. Or if I don't get an update, I'll also call you.
Okay. All right. All right. Thank you.
Yep. Have a nice day.
Mark, I have a question, and I don't know whether the chief or Peter's the right person to answer it. In a situation like this, where you have a property and it's sort of in limbo, I guess you want to say, are there times where the township would, you know, put something across the driveway so people can't enter and exit freely? Is that an appropriate thing to do, or or is this just a totally unknown area that we're in right now in terms of legality and stuff like things along those lines?
Chuck, this is Peter. I don't think, you know, if it becomes a problem, then yes, we can step in and say, this has become a nuisance, it's become a danger. But to proactively do it, you know, it's not our property. It's you know, it's really up to the estate and the heirs to try to take control of this and maintain it and, you know, ensure that it's protected. But, you know, that being said, if we want to put a chain across it, you know, I don't know, you know, if we run it, I would run it by the, you know, the heirs. If we have contact information, I think, on these people, I'd run it by them first, and they don't have a problem with it, then, you know, go ahead and do it. But I don't think it'd be appropriate for us to do proactively without talking to the heirs or whoever becomes the administrator of the estate.
Agreed. I think that's a very good suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who knows who's going in and out. And it seems like, you know, the Browns have observed stuff, and maybe it's legit, maybe who knows. But I don't know how the rest of the board feels, if that's an appropriate thing to do at this point.
Well,
I was just going to say, I think we have to follow what Peter is saying, is that the property no longer belongs to Mr. Halko, it belongs to his heirs and the estate, and it's up to them, unless they reach out to the township, or unless we have a reason to do something different. I think we have to respect that.
Well, what was mentioned is that we actually contact, let's say, the people that we have, and ask them whether it would be okay.
Yeah, Chuck, this is Heidi Brown again, and I guess that was my next question or comment, is how do we find out who the heirs are? If there are heirs, we don't even know if there was a will to that property. Until we find out who is supposed to be on that property, do we just wait for something to happen? How do we find out? Because I would hate for something not good to happen again, and then have another situation on our hands again.
I mean, Ms. Brown, this is Peter Nelson. Just because Mr. Hockle is dead doesn't mean the property now is kind of like a free-for-all. Upon his death, it automatically is going to become a part of his estate. I suspect, with my limited history of Mr. Hockle, I suspect there is no will there. So it's going to have to go through probate, and it's going to, that's going to slow things up. But still, it's private property, and we have to respect that, unfortunately. I think the best thing we do as part of the township dealing with Mr. Hockle and trying to work with him over this oil situation, I do believe the township has had contact information with relatives. And so, let us reach out to them. Before you try doing anything, because you don't need to make a bad situation worse. It's gonna take some time. Assuming there is no will, it's gonna take a little time to move it through probate, get a person appointed to handle his estate, and then. Once that's happening, hopefully, once that's all public record, we'll be able to figure that, who that is. And the township can work with that person once they're appointed.
With all due respect, I was not insinuating that I was taking anything into my own hands. I was simply inquiring about, do we know if there is some kind of will or somebody that is going to be responsible for that estate?
There's no public repository for a will until it's actually lodged with the court. We won't know until, you can check the court dockets and to see if anything is filed. But until that happens, there's no public knowledge, public way to find that out. We won't know if there's anyone responsible for the property until someone is named, either in the will or by the court.
So maybe the township should look into that to see if there's anybody named, so we know.
We'll contact who we have contact information. We have a couple of contact numbers. We'll make contact with them and see if we can find any more information out.
Yeah, just because if you guys did not know that there was anybody on that property yesterday, then there could be another situation.
Heidi, yep. Heidi, this is the Chief Maxey. Listen, this certainly, if you are concerned or any other resident is concerned that there is somebody on the property that shouldn't be, just under the auspice of a suspicious circumstance, you can call the police and we will go out and in a tactful manner find out who is there. and exactly what they're up to. If it's somebody that's connected with the family, you know, then we'll have some discussions. I mean, that's going to get into some of the realm of what Peter's been speaking about. But if it's somebody that is just rummaging around or somebody that has heard that he has passed away, then obviously that's something we would want to be concerned about in an effort and under the auspice of preserving the property for the probate process and all the other parties that are interested. So the police are here to help you if you feel as though there's a suspicious situation going on, and I really recommend that you do call us.
Okay, will do.
Thank you. So the action item, Mark, you're going to reach out to your contact.
Yep.
Explain this, explain our concerns, explain the residents' concerns, and see if at all possible what the status of the will is, or if we can at least, should we be securing the property in some way?
Okay. Yep.
This is Dan Horf. Just out of curiosity, do we know if, I know from the demolition of the house, is there anything that at least indicates that the that it's there's danger left from when the fire department was there? Because it's, you know.
No, not the front house is, you know, pretty much, but like Heidi said, there's other structures that really probably could come down at any time. And the facility that he was living in also probably would not be would not be good. They had to call the fire company to get into there to remove remove Mr. Hockle. So,
all right.
So I'll reach out to who we have as contacts and see if I can get any more information.
Great. Thank you, Mark.
Yep.
So now back to Township Engineer Report.
Thank you, Chuck. To quote an old commercial, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes,
we got you.
So I was trying to provide the information that I believe we have some good news to share with the board regarding the Gerloff Road Bridge. Just a quick history: back in 1996, PennDOT refurbished that structure, and the township accepted responsibility for it at that time. Back around 2016, it needed some repairs and attention, and the township hired J.D. Ekman contractors to do that work. And we speculated about years to come that it would need to be repainted, having been over 20 years since the refurbishing was complete. So we held a site visit early this month with Mr. Urban of J.D. Ekman to look at the condition of the bridge and what needed to be done and what kind of costs were involved. And here's the good news: if the township continues to address the areas which exhibit rust and do basic maintenance and repairs, that full structure repainting could be delayed for many, many years. So that's the very good news that I wanted to share with the board tonight. Mr. Urban from J.D. Ekman is going to prepare an estimate for us for the costs associated with washing down the structure and addressing the rust with rust removal, priming and painting, straightening some bent tie rods, and replacing some rods as necessary. In addition, he went over with Mark Hudson and I some basic maintenance that could be done by township staff, also to keep that bridge in good condition. So I look forward to sharing that with you when I get it from Mr. Urban, an estimate for that work. That's all I had to talk to you about tonight, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Carol, I just have one question, but not about the bridge. Is the work on the sidewalk completely done? The last time we talked about it, they just need to do the line painting.
We are waiting for one more line. The center line still has to be placed.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Terry. I do have a question about the bridge. So I know, I think last time it came up, and then even a couple years ago when it came up, we were looking into some of the state programs for these old bridges. The work that J.D. Ekman, whoever, is going to do, is there still a possibility that we get a grant or some way to help fund these repairs and maybe potential painting?
So I had opened a line of contact with somebody at the state about grants for bridge repair. It didn't exactly fit into the program that she and I spoke about, but she said we might be able to fit it in a different direction. So I believe the next step would be to get an idea of the cost from Mr. Urban at J.D. Ekman, and then I can reach back out to this contact we have at the state.
Okay.
Any other questions for our township engineer? Great. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Township staff reports. Chief Maxey.
Thank you, Chuck. Just a brief report tonight. During the month of November, there was 267 calls for service. We have rolled out our Shield 12 radar speed sign, and we've actually had it deployed to two separate locations in the township, and we continue to get requests for that, and we'll be moving it around. It really has turned out to be a wonderful device, and I want to thank the board for approving the funding for that. And finally, the police department received checks totaling the amount of $452.81 from District Court 38203. And these monies represent traffic and criminal fines paid by defendants in various matters brought before the court. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Chief. Are there any questions for Chief Maxey? Just one general question, Chief.
Sure.
You know, we talked about personnel in hiring, right, to replace officers. Just time frame, when do you think something like that would start?
Well, last Friday was the final day that we accepted applications. I was a little bit taken aback. We advertised, on addition to the township's website, we advertised on the Pennsylvania Chiefs of Police Association's website, and we received about 71 resumes submitted. That's an all-time high since I've been the chief here, and I was a little bit stunned. But that's great for us because that's going to give us a very wide range of people to look at. And what we are doing now is we are just going through the resumes, making sure that everybody has the minimum qualifications that we required. And then we'll be beginning to schedule interviews. And we have a process set up. We're going to have a two-stage process with our interviews. So the first interviews will be conducted by Corporal Milligan with the assistance of Officer Rinker. He's going to then forward the 10 best applicants to myself and Mark. We will meet with those people. And at that point, hopefully we will be able to whittle it down to two candidates that we will push through our extensive background, polygraph, psychological and physical process. And then we will ultimately be able to bring that information to the board. I'm thinking just off the top of my head, and it's kind of hard with the COVID situation to know how that may play into this, but I'm hoping that we will get names to the board with resumes and write-ups for you to consider in by May. I know that seems a little far out with the hopes of hiring in May, but I think that realistically that's probably when that's going to happen. Okay. Some of these processes can take a long time. The background investigation takes between 2 to 3 weeks per candidate, and then the additional testing, we're kind of at the scheduling ability of the people that are involved in that, which is a polygrapher and who will actually come and do it in-house here for us. But we have a polygrapher who we bring in from the state that does that. And then we have the psychological and physical are by doctors that are off-site, obviously. So we just, I'm being a little conservative. It may be before that, but I think that realistically we're looking at May.
Okay. Go ahead, Marla.
This is Marla. I have a couple questions. I know one thing we always talk about is diversity. I mean, is it a more diverse pool that is, you know, women and minorities? And my second question is, you know, in the last year or so, there's been a lot of talk about how can you ensure that if a police officer is let go from one force, another force doesn't pick them up, if there's a serious reason why, if there's a serious reason why they've been let go, not just something small. Do you know if anything like that has happened either in Montgomery County or in the state to facilitate that database?
Well, that's actually great. Governor Wolf did sign a bill into law, which now is a requirement that police departments must provide information on other, if, for instance, if we had a police officer working here and they separated from us and went to another agency, we must provide the information and their background on that situation, as well as things such as discipline and the reason for separation. In the past, and Marla, we've run into this, there has been great hesitancy, and I got to be honest with you, I think that the majority of police chiefs in Pennsylvania support this bill because it's going to really help us cut through a lot of red tape. In essence, what we're going to hopefully start to see happening is bad people being passed down the road to other municipalities. With that being said, to circle back around to your first question, I have not had a chance to really go through the applicants. I can tell you just by looking at some of the people that have submitted resumes, we do have more women than we've ever had in the past, which is great for us. In terms of people's minority status, we'll know that as we get a little bit further into the process. The great thing and why I chose to use the PA Chiefs website is this is a statewide website. You get a lot of coverage, and it cost us about $100 to run the ad. And I think we got more bang for the buck than we would have had we advertised in local newspapers. The other good thing is that spinoff groups oftentimes use the PA Chiefs to look for and to direct applicants that are looking for law enforcement jobs. So I think that my hope is that we're going to really wind up with a group that is a little more widespread, cast a larger net than what we've had before.
Great. That's all good news. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Chief Maxey? I know I see Warren did have his hand up. Maybe he'll make a comment later. Chief, thank you for the very, you know, thorough explanation of the process. And I guess my only ask is that maybe from time to time over the next few months that you just sort of, you know, update us so we have, you know whether or not we're May is a realistic date or perhaps not. And that may.
Absolutely, Chuck. I'll keep the board well informed as to how the process is going and how we're making out.
Because I know residents are always asking too. So
absolutely.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark, are you going to do the Parks and Road report?
Yep. During the month of November, we got the trucks ready to plow snow. We got ready for snow if it comes. We put the deer fence up around the new, or let me say, retrofitted, updated rain garden at Putty Park. We completed two sump pump inspections. I installed the no parking signs on Village Drive. We went over and cleaned all the mowers as we got those put away for winter. And then we installed the wood carpet at Foy Park Playground.
Any questions for Mark? Great. I understand the wood carpet is still there.
The wood carpet is still there.
Good.
Holding strong.
Dodged a bullet.
Yeah, that was an interesting rainstorm we had yesterday.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on, Township Manager report. Mark.
All right. So our first thing that we talked about this last week is the B team builder's escrow release for $1,032.75. It will still leave them with around $37,000 in their escrow. When this escrow was set up, it was set up so that when the B team uses township services, legal or engineering, then we would release from that escrow and pay the bills for B team. So this is about the, I think this is the fourth time we've done this for them. So it's $1,032.75. You want to just do one thing at a time here, Chuck?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
So we need a motion on that one.
Yep.
I'll so move.
Okay, Noelle Halter makes a motion to release escrow for B team.
I'll second, Dan Orff.
Dan Orff seconds. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of releasing the escrow as described by our manager for B team, say aye.
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 Any against? Motion carries unanimously. Great. Thank you.
All right. The next item is the no parking ordinance update. So as I just said, we installed the signs on the Village Drive curve. So the update to the no parking ordinance that we have will include this, the Village Drive, both sides. From the northerly intersection of Aspen to 60 feet east of Grimley Road intersection. So the area in red is the new area of no parking. And then along Goshen Road, along the new sidewalk, on the blue side, we have the sidewalk, and we made a designated parking area in there. And then we have two sections of red on the southerly side of Goshen Road. So we have the extending 375 feet west of Grimley Road. And then we have the other little square area there starting at 575 feet west of Grimley and extending to 750 feet. By doing that, we didn't mess with the parking areas that are designated already, but just clear that up. So what we need to do is advertise the ordinance. And then we would see this again at our December 15th meeting to approve. So we need a motion to authorize to advertise the no parking ordinance update.
I move to authorize the advertisement of the update to the no parking ordinance. Dan Orff.
I'll second. Marla.
Marla Hexter seconds. Any discussion? All in favor of advertising the update to the no parking ordinance, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any against? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Budget.
So the next item is the budget, the 2021 budget. There we go. So we talked about the 2021 budget several times at our meeting in the beginning of November. We advertised, we made a tentative approval of the budget. It's been out, it's been advertised. I've gotten no comments. Worked with Cindy, didn't see anything, any reason to change anything. So I would recommend just approving the budget as advertised. Again, the general fund revenue is $1,914,625. Expenses are the $2,198,250. Again, that includes the generator. Paul and I are working on that. We're going to meet with another electrician in the next week or two to look more at just replacing what we have. When we got the original, that was to run the whole building. We're going to scale it back. But just to get things moving, we put the budget in there, knowing that we won't go that far. And then the sewer fund revenue is expected at $793,500, and the expenses were $914,763.
Any questions? Again?
No.
Go ahead, Dan?
Yeah, I move to approve the 2021 budget as advertised.
For both the general fund and the sewer fund?
Yes, for both the general and the sewer fund. Thanks for the clarification.
Yep. Chuck Yizer, I'll second Dan Orff's motion. Is there any discussion from the board?
Anybody hear me? That's the second time I've seconded it and nobody's in here for me.
No, you can second. I'll if you
want. Hear me.
I didn't hear you, Marla. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, then it doesn't matter.
Is there any further discussion? Okay, everybody, all in favor of approving the 2021 budgets as advertised for the general fund and the sewer fund, say aye.
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 Any against? The motion carries unanimously. Okay, Mark.
All right, so the next item that I had on my list was the EAC bylaws. But I guess it had been, sorry, hold on a second. Back to that. So the EAC have bylaws that were put together, I guess, when they were originally working on it. So we had a couple questions. So I wanted to see if the board would be all right if we send this to the new solicitor. There's an item in there about calling a special meeting, but any special meetings would have to be run by the board because any meeting has to be advertised. So the advertising costs and stuff would have to be run by the board that I wanted to get his opinion on. And then there was a portion of the bylaws where it talks about holding a hearing. And I wanted to get the solicitor's input on that section four.
Peter?
You want my input now?
Sure.
I mean, the EACs are empowered by a state statute that the township's ordinance then follows pretty closely. And the things that Mark pointed out, as well as a couple other things, really don't fall under that state statute or our ordinance. And, you know, there's also another section here where I think the EAC is deciding, you know, when they meet. Once again, that's usually something that is established by the Board of Supervisors, and it's something that's going to be advertised along with all the other township meetings at one time at the, you know, within the next couple of months for 2021. If strictly speaking, I don't know if there's any, there's certainly nothing legally that prohibits the EAC from doing what's set forth in these bylaws. However, there's nothing that specifically empowers them to do this either. And I would have, you know, certainly the power to call meetings and to force the township to spend funds. You know, that's something that usually it would have to be run by the Board of Supervisors to make sure, you know, that the Board of Supervisors are fine with those costs. As for hearings, I wouldn't call them hearings. When you name something a hearing, you know, at least for attorneys, you know, that means something where an actual record is being created. You know, we have a court reporter, there's evidence, there's, you know, certain set of rules that are followed. I would, you know, if the EAC wants to hold special meetings where they're going to be exploring certain topics, you know, I think that's fine, but let's call them special meetings and not hearings, because hearings from a legal standpoint are a term of art. And I don't think that is something, you know, we want the EAC holding. So, you know, if I'd rather have under section four, you know, call those something, you know, call them special meetings, call them something else besides hearings.
So Peter, I see Ruth has her hand up, but before we call on her. I wanted to ask you. So to summarize, it sounds like what you're saying is it may not even be necessary for the EAC to have bylaws, but if they do want to have bylaws, is there any advantage to them to do so?
I mean, normally committees like the EAC or a planning commission or a park and rec board, they may have bylaws, but these bylaws overlap the ordinance that creates the EAC somewhat. Normally bylaws are going to be more, how a meeting is run. They're more like kind of meeting rules or meeting policies than true bylaws. I mean, some of these bylaws, they merely parrot what's in the state statute, which is mirrored in our ordinance. So I don't know if they're necessary. This is unusual.
Yeah. And this is Dan Orff. Both the item in section two related to special meetings and the item that you pointed out in section four, I personally wouldn't like to see them, not personally, as a supervisor, I would not like to see them continue to exist in their bylaws, because they're troubling from the standpoint of incurring costs. And the section 4.1, using the term hearings, raises all kinds of red flags. So I would think that those two sections, if they want bylaws, would have to be either updated, revised, so that those two concerns that you just itemized no longer exist within their bylaws. Hold for other people's thoughts.
Perhaps we should hear from Ruth and she can explain.
Yeah. Ruth, you're there.
Hi. Thanks for taking my comment. I just want to give you a little background. The bylaws that we used were from the EAC network. They recommend that the first thing you do is establish bylaws, and more the reason why we did it is the incidence of, well, what if a member doesn't attend meetings and things like that. We never actually could think of an instance where we would have a special meeting or have some of these things even come up, but they were in the generic version. We tried to make sure that our bylaws matched other bylaws of other committees within the township, and we didn't have any luck with that. We would have been happy to have just taken whatever the other committees use. So honestly, I just want you to know that whatever you decide is fine. If you take that information out, that's fine. It's only in there because it was basically a standard from the EAC network. It's more important to us that we have some guidance on how we handle our meetings, how we choose our officers and those kind of things. I can't see any reason why we would have to have a hearing. So just wanted to throw that in there.
This is Chuck. I mean, in my reading of the handbook, the EAC handbook, I didn't see any indication of a hearing in any of that. So I would agree.
Peter, what's your determination? What do you think?
I would recommend the two sections that Mark has highlighted in the draft bylaws. I think it would be good to delete them. So the second paragraph in section 2 of Article 6, and then I think all of section 4 should probably be eliminated.
I would concur with that, Peter.
So, do the bylaws still need to be, the original ask was whether we would have the bylaws reviewed by our solicitor. Is that now a moot point?
Yeah, I think I'll take those sections out and I'll resend it out to the EAC and the board, and I'll send it to Peter just so he has a quick look if that's okay. And then, you know, hopefully we can get these approved in the very near future.
Great. Thank you.
Good.
Any other questions for a township manager before we move on to solicitor report? Okay, solicitor report.
The first item up is the telecommunications ordinance. At the last public meeting, it was requested that my office prepare a design manual. A draft manual, I think, was just finished today. So I'm going to look it over. And if everything looks good, I'll pass it on to the township staff and hopefully have that in front of you for you guys to review for your second meeting in December.
Do we want to consider having another group review them as well, like Planning Commission?
I have no issue with that. That if you want that to happen, that's perfectly fine.
I'm throwing it out there for the group.
No, Chuck, I think that's a good idea.
So maybe then they come to us, we'll look them over, and then if we don't see anything problematic, then we recommend that they go to the Planning Commission for their.
Yeah. That sounds reasonable, Chuck. It's Dan Work.
Okay. Sounds good, Peter.
All right, great. The second item on under my report is Sandbrick Development Agreement and the Sandbrick Memorandum of Development Agreement. These are two documents that my office prepared. Mr. Sandbrick has executed them. And they are before the board for the board to authorize the chairman to execute them on behalf of the township. The development agreement is designed to protect the township and to ensure that developers undertake all the public improvements that are part of an approved development plan. The memorandum of development agreement is just a short, I think, in this case, 3-page document that basically is recorded, and it puts people on notice that, hey, there is a development agreement out there in regards to this property. We record the memorandum of development agreement because it, you know, recorded deeds charge per page, and it's a lot cheaper to record a 3-page memorandum than a 30-to-40-page development agreement. These forms were prepared by me, and are based on our forms that I've used over the years.
This is Marla. Peter or Mark, could you please tell us what precipitated this?
Mr. Sandbrick brought in a building permit to begin constructing the first house on the property. So once that started, then we needed to get the development agreement and things in place and get all the other items that were waived prior to him starting, or when he got approval originally, which was in July of 19. And then this board also waived
escrow.
Thank you. The escrow until the time when he started a project. So when he turned in the building permit, then we started working on the development agreement and the memorandum of development agreement and getting all the other paperwork and financial security is in place to get that done. So that's where we are.
But isn't there, I mean, isn't there something going on with trees being cut down and things being cleared prematurely?
He did cut the trees down a little early. As soon as we found that out, we did a cease and desist on the property so that we could bring him into compliance. The ENS was not in place at the time of the tree removal. So again, after the cease and desist was placed on the Sandberg property, then he complied, got all of the ENS controls in place, got the construction entrance in place, and has been working with the township since that point to try to get everything in order so that he can proceed correctly.
I'm sitting in the wind or something, but I'm just concerned. There seems to be a pattern in Lower Frederick that developers are kind of jumping the gun and clearing before they have permission to do it, and then potentially doing things they weren't supposed to do, but it's too late because once a tree is cut down, it's not coming back. So, I mean, I know this is something that the EAC and the Planning Commission are talking about, but is there anything that we can do or any penalty we can impose to stop this from happening?
Yeah. Is there any way to do? Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I was just going to say, is there any way we can do a retrospective analysis or something to see the nature and type of trees that were removed? Because this is quite disturbing that there, in addition to the trees being removed, the proper steps weren't taken to mitigate silt runoff into the Goshopin Creek, and also a couple other concerns that related to what is supposed to take place for a site to go under construction. So I know Carol wants to speak to this
as soon as we learned that things has happened, we called in the County Conservation District. They did come out and issued him a letter. But basically the letter says, just get your stuff in place. Next time we come out, if it's not in place, you'll be in trouble. So we did call the County Conservation District. Carol and I were on site today and met the team that did the stakeout, and Carol can hop on here. She actually knows the person that did the stakeout. They did the stakeout before they cleared any trees, and she has a good relationship with the surveyor and feels very good that the surveyor did things correctly. He works for another engineering firm. And we have been looking to try to look back, and Carol did find a good photo actually from 1992. She sent it late today, where this used to be a lot of grasslands. It's the trees that are in the area, from what we can tell, what's left is like just cedar trees. It was cleared in 92. So it looks like it's mostly, not to call it, but it'd be like scrub tree and cedar trees, that kind of stuff. No large specimens were in the area. As for doing it early, yes, I know. And we have talked about looking at ways, and Peter can also hop on if, unfortunately, we don't have any good way to find someone right now. And it may be more costly to us than it would be to the person. Is that correct, Peter?
Well, I mean, the one thing I think Carol needs to talk about, let's look at what's happened on Sandbrick, is that as far as we can tell, the issue with Mr. Sandbrick is that he took the trees down before putting up the appropriate ENS controls. It's not that he took trees down he wasn't supposed to. As far, Carol, correct me if I'm wrong, as far as we can tell, based on Carol going out there today, the trees he took down were the trees he was permitted to take down under the plan approval. He didn't take anything extra down. Now, as far as moving forward and trying to be proactive regarding these concerns, my recommendation to the board would be to look at some sort of natural resource protection standards. The township has some, but certainly I represent other townships that have many more. And those, that would be very helpful in protecting trees. You also can enact, reforestation standards. If people take down a certain amount of trees or a certain type of trees, it triggers reforestation that they have to plant replacement trees. I even prepared an ordinance for one township where we do what's called afforestation, which is where you have an empty field. The developer hasn't cleared the field, but it's currently empty. And when the developer comes in and develops that property, they actually have to reforest that empty field or parts of it. So add additional trees, not just replace trees they're removing, but actually increase the trees on the site. So those are three ways that you can deal with these issues. As far as what happened here with Mr. Sambrek and the ENS controls, normally that is a conservation district matter. I'm not, the township could pass its own grading and ENS ordinance if it wanted to, and that would give us more enforcement powers if that's something the township would want to get involved in.
If you'd like me to follow up on what both Mark and Peter said, yes, Mr. Sambrick jumped the gun and started doing work that did not comply with the agreement that he entered with the township when his subdivision plan was approved. He was supposed to be reaching out to the township, setting up all these financial security and agreements before he did any work on that lot. And there's been a lot of frustration expressed between myself and Mr. Hudson and Mr. Nelson about what transpired out there. When I was out there today, as Mr. Hudson mentioned, I encountered the surveyor. He happened to be somebody I know, used to work with. He did confirm for me that they did do survey stakeout of the limits of clearing. So that gives me some level of confidence that it wasn't a random bulldozing event, that there actually was a survey demarcation of the limits of clearing. We could further verify that if the township wanted us to do so. The ordinances that we have in place and the penalty provisions that we have in place that I've reviewed all talk to bringing somebody into compliance. And if they don't come into compliance, that's when the fines come into play. We did alert the County Conservation District. They saw the same thing we did and filed a report with the same comments and concerns about violations of certain laws, such as the Clean Stream Law and certain chapters of Pennsylvania state law, with a release of sediment-laden waters from the site. But again, just like the township codes, they speak to bringing the property into compliance, and if it's not done within a certain period of time, then penalties apply. So this is where I also agree with what Mr. Nelson said. This is where you might want to bring along the tree protection ordinances that I know the EAC and Planning Commission have talked about, bring them forward such that when there is tree removal, there is tree replacement. But that goes back to refining the codes that are in the township to meet some of the priorities of the board today.
So Dan, I assume that you and the others are still have some work to do, Dan, sounds like.
Me? that would be Warren and the EAC folks. I was on the team that did this thing with respect to below grade water structures. So Warren had his hand up though.
Yeah, let me just before we jump off here, because we kind of mixed two things together.
Yeah.
So the agreement that's before us is a standard agreement to be for any developer. Yes, we've had a problem with this particular development. But this is a standard agreement that the township would put in place for any developer. Is that right, Peter?
Yes. Okay. It's some, you know, somewhat modified for this particular development, but right. Most of the provisions are standard. Yes.
Okay.
And you know, I can, you know, I did make it specially modified, especially for Lord Frederick by putting in additional new language regarding the placement of boulders.
Yeah.
So
I just wanted to make that clear, because the way the conversation transitioned, it went right away to the missteps of the developer there. And, you know, so great. I think Warren had his hand up.
I do have a question before we.
Yep.
So just kind of reading through the 2019 documents, the other item was that they would certify that the wells are good before the building permit. Did I hear that's already been done? They've provided all that evidence?
They have not provided the well evidence yet, and we have not provided them with a – they don't have a building permit yet.
Okay, they just applied for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So
I think that – oh, go ahead, Mark. Sorry.
We had a conference call with Mr. Sandbrook on Wednesday, where we finally were able to all talk and get things all out on the table and explain to him what he has to do and what he has to provide to the township before he will be issued a building permit. So we're holding the building permit until all of those items are done, and Peter, Carol, and the township are satisfied.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, again, three of us, I believe, were on the planning commission at the time that they came with the plans, and there was three items, and I know we're kind of mixing some of the terminologies, but it was the sidewalks, street trees, and then the well issues, and just kind of add the context. And I did go back and revisit the notes, and it was the developer had basically referred to them as wooded lots, and that's why, I guess from that, going back into my memory, it seemed as if they wouldn't be clear cut, even though there's still wood lines between the, you know, rows of trees between the lots. And in the minutes themselves, it was actually mentioned that the applicant expressed position that to remove trees and replace them is not in the spirit of the ordinance, even though there may not be the ordinance we need to support this. So just going back to the minutes and the conversations, I guess just being on the planning commission at the time, it didn't seem as if it was going to be a clear cut lot. It was going to be, you know, basically kept wooded, which maybe doesn't seem like the case anymore. So
he did not clear cut the whole lot. He just clear cut the area where the house is going where the stuff is going. The whole lot's not been clear cut.
Okay.
It's actually rounded and there's fingers and stuff left. So.
Okay. Gotcha.
Oh, and Peter, if you have good examples of this natural resource protection standards, reforestation standards, and afforestation ordinances, that would be helpful if you could maybe send them to Mark and he could forward them to the appropriate persons who are looking at that.
Absolutely.
So we do have, I have another thing to bring up then after this, that the EAC tree group had asked, and I was going to ask under new business, but we'll get it going. We do have to get back to the development agreement, but they have a document that they'd like Peter to look at that I was going to ask the board if it was all right to send over to him. So we'll come back to that after we're done the development agreement. But we have Warren. You ready for that, Chuck?
Yes. Go ahead. Yeah, I was just going to remind you Warren has his hand up.
Yep. Warren, you're good.
Can I be heard?
Yep, you're there.
Okay, Peter, you mentioned that one of the ways to combat some of the problems that we've had is with natural protection standards, and you list the particular standards. And what EAC has been working on isn't standalone ordinances or standards. It's just trying to we already have a lot of existing stuff in our code that theoretically should be should work to solve a lot of these problems. And the AAC a couple of months ago forwarded a letter to Mark, who forwarded to Carol, who gave a response listing our ordinances 145 that talked about our protection, and in that 145-42, the tree protection fence, all that stuff. The only thing is, what happens when somebody does something? They can't be brought back into compliance when they've destroyed something that can't be replaced. And in the situation with the Sandbrook development, they got a waiver for street trees, and no problem. They cut down those trees, so now all they have to do, they can certainly come into compliance by just replacing the trees. That's no big deal. They're little trees. But what went on in the last couple of weeks up here at Arcadia, they just completely bulldozed through the tree protection zone fence and smashed into the trees. We have an ordinance that has it for the tree protection fence is supposed to stay there for the whole duration of the construction, and you're not supposed to do any compaction or anything. There's no way, if you see what was done up there in the last couple of weeks, that you could say that that doesn't violate our ordinance. But there's no way we can enforce it. These ordinances mean absolutely nothing. I feel like it's a total waste of time drawing up new ordinances unless we first come up with an enforcement mechanism.
But Warren, what I'm suggesting here is actually amendments to the zoning ordinance, and their zoning is much easier. It has a built-in enforcement mechanism, unlike SALDO. Enforcing SALDO during a construction process is problematic. It's not easy. You end up having to go to county court. It's kind of a clunky enforcement process. But zoning, zoning, we can issue an enforcement notice. They have 30 days to appeal to the zoning hearing board. If they fail to do so, the violation is conclusively determined. We then can take them either to DJ court for fines or county court for fines and an injunction. And, you know, in my experience, the natural resource protection standards in zoning actually works quite well. And you use them to protect not only woodlands, but wetlands, waterways, riparian buffers, wetland margins, steep slopes, karst areas. There's a lot of different areas that you can protect. And as long as we don't get overly exuberant with our protection standards, so much so that courts will strike them down as being too overly protective, they do work very well. But and not that I am completely comfortable with your ordinances, and I'm still learning everything you have and don't have. I definitely think the zoning ordinance could be beefed up if in the protection of natural resources. Now, the reforestation, I see that both in zoning, but more often I see that as a SALDO issue, and the afforestation is only a SALDO matter. But what I'm recommending more is the protection standards in zoning.
Well, I'd love to know a little bit more about how to put it into zoning. When we originally discussed this, I believe it was Chuck who said that he was really comfortable with us trying to get our protection through SALDO rather than through standalone ordinances. And at that time, I was looking for a standalone ordinance, and I went along with Chuck's line of thinking, because here where this really pertains is I don't want to regulate things on private property. I want to concern myself with having our regulating a development. It's already regulated. I want to see to it that the spirit of the way that Arsaldo regulates things, gets complied with.
But
tell me at this point that the saldo is basically meaningless because we can't enforce anything on it.
It's not meaningless, except this most saldo is designed to be more prospective. It's supposed to guide how a project is designed. It's the design of the project that really saldo is more involved in. And that's why going after someone during the construction phase of a project is difficult, because the saldo really isn't geared for that sort of enforcement procedure. To kind of bring this all the way back around to the original matter before the board, that's why you have development agreements. The development agreement is actually is written so to guarantee that a developer undertakes the development in compliance with the plan. And the development agreement sets forth a very straightforward enforcement procedure. And makes it's easier to kind of it gives kind of quicker enforcement remedies, because usually with a development agreement you get some sort of financial security, and if they violate certain development, certain saldo, requirements or the way the plan is designed, we can tap that financial security immediately to correct those problems. Likewise, the development agreement contains language saying, hey, if you're not doing this in compliance with the plan, or if you're violating something, we're going to stop issuing building permits or other permits, and even in some cases, we'll pull the permits that are already issued. So it freezes everything up. Now there are cases where developers, tell the township to pound sand, and they're going to proceed even if we tell them to stop, and if we do stop orders, and I've never dealt with this, but I've seen where you actually have police involved to try to shut the place down. I mean, things get really messy. But generally, under the development agreement, that gives us better powers to deal with land development and problems during the land development. The issue you see.
You're giving me a revelation here. It seems like the only way things are enforceable is when you get the legal agreement through the developer's agreement, and then that's where we've gone wrong in the past all along here.
It's not the only way, but it's a much simpler and easier way. It's less costly to the township.
So in the saldo, That involves the planning process. During the planning process, in our saldo, it says that we determine where the trees that are going to be protected are, and we're going to put up a permanent fence throughout the period of construction. And if we're going to enforce anything about that tree protection zone, it's meaningless unless we have it in the developer agreement
I wouldn't say it's meaningless, sir. We can still, there's still a process to where we can enforce an approved plan, that we can enforce certain saldo. The issue, I think, I'm not super familiar with the sections you're talking about in saldo, but, tree protection fencing, that's something a little different than actually protecting the trees.
Well, it shouldn't be.
But I think
it should be written in such a way as that it that it works.
The tree protection fencing is kind of putting something up. So to be honest, it's more so that you put that up so the contractors, many times, who have no idea, have never. Are completely separate, independent people from the developers, and therefore have not sat through all the meetings with the township and understand how important it is to protect trees or whatever. the tree protection fencing is put up just to make sure the people actually doing the work on the property understand where they can and cannot go.
Yeah, and, work last week up here.
I fully understand that. But I think that's a somewhat different matter than actually having laws that say you cannot disturb these areas. Because we can have laws that say you cannot disturb these areas and not protect them, you know, demarcate them with tree protection fencing. Or you can just have on a plan saying, here's the limits of our disturbance. We're going to demarcate it with tree protection fencing. But all the lands and the resources behind that tree protection fencing, they might not be legally protected in any way. You know, it's just that, you know, the developer has said, okay, yeah, we're not going to disturb back there. And they make that demarcation for, you know, erosion and sediment control purposes, for NPDES purposes. But, you know, it's not because the township says you can't go back there. It's because there's other rules and regulations that say you can't go back there. But getting this back around, the other reason why you want these things in zoning is, you know, I've heard the township has had issues with people clear-cutting property before they go through the development process. The problem with having something only in saldo is saldo only comes in play and only, you know, becomes active when someone actually files a land development or a subdivision plan. And
well, that didn't work in Arcadia either.
Well, if you only have these protections in saldo, you know, the crafty, sly landowner or developer is going to get around them because they're going to undertake all those violations before saldo comes into effect. And so there's nothing we can do. Only by having them in zoning can you, you know, do you know that these things are going to be protected 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, regardless of who owns the property, regardless of what activities are happening on the property, the zoning applies across the board. If it's in a subdivision in land development, you know, that's only going to be triggered if someone actually files for a subdivision in land development. And so they're very easy to, you know, circumvent.
Okay, well, we'll be looking for your guidance on how to put it in zoning.
Okay.
I can tell you from my personal standpoint, not speaking for the EAC, I am not going to be in favor of an ordinance that overregulates the use of private property.
That's the township's choice. I'm just making suggestions, giving examples of how it's done elsewhere. And, you know, there's whether the township agrees, you know, to go to follow these or not, you know, that's their decision. I'm just trying to provide them with options to pick.
Okay.
This is Chuck. One of my suggestions that I had made to Mark more recently was that perhaps, you know, to get everybody up to speed, that we go back and pull the engineer review letters, pull the planning commission minutes, and, you know, make sure that we kind of do a post-mortem on these two properties so that, you know, Peter is up to speed exactly how things went, what decisions were made, what basis they were made on. Certainly some of the things that Peter has said tonight, you know, he's provided a lot of detail, and we didn't get into that with our previous solicitor when we talked about it earlier this year. I have no issues either way, whether it's saldo or zoning. At the time I said zoning based on the saldo based on the information I knew of, but I'm an open book, open mind on this thing. So that would be my recommendation.
Chuck, that information is available. Linda was in the working group on behalf of the Planning Commission when they and the EAC discussed this. And she volunteered to go back and do the work of pulling up all the old minutes and stuff like that. And she has a timeline for our
Okay. That'd be great. You know, that way everybody has the same information.
Yeah, I'd really love it if the supervisors would approve spending the money for our solicitor to look that stuff over and bring himself up to speed on what on the history.
I don't know whether that's something the board wants to comment right now. They want to think about it.
Let's think about that.
You have Ruth that wants to make a comment.
Yeah. Thank you, Warren.
Ruth, you're there.
Hi. Yeah, it's Ruth Heil here, the EAC chair. Peter, I just want to thank you. We really appreciate your guidance. And I just want to make the comment that it is our hope that the development agreement that now exists has been strengthened to accommodate for the lessons learned at Arcadia. And just some of what you have already advised tonight answers questions related to the letter that Mark will be referring to. So we just want you to know, or I just want you to know on behalf of the EAC, we really appreciate your attention to what we're trying to achieve. You know, there's different ways to come at it, and we just want to strengthen the township, and we appreciate your angle, and we rely on you for that help. So thank you.
It's my pleasure, Ruth. Thank you very much for the compliment. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I guess this is Dan Orff. Like, the only thing I would say, Peter, is I guess our hope would be that what we believe to be stated in the saldo is somehow manifested in what the developers allowed, how the developer responsibly develops his property in alignment with what we thought, or what we gained agreement with them, and that's documented in the saldo and documented in the plan. And I think the disconnect has been, seems to be that we believe that if we go to the, you know, come out of the planning commission meeting with an agreement, and those things are documented and then documented in saldo, that is supposed to take place. And you're telling us that's not adequate. So hopefully we can come up with a way where the development plans agreements make sure that what we all agreed to in the planning commission and then subsequently in the board of supervisors actually turns into the reality on the ground, as opposed to the developers then just doing things that are inconsistent with what the expectations were.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, you know, the problem is if you have people who aren't going to follow through or comply with our ordinances or comply with agreements that they sign, it's going to cost the township time and money to bring them into compliance. Generally speaking, most developers, they're going to, for the most part, comply with the ordinances and comply with agreements. You know, unfortunately, Mr. Sambrick didn't. And to be honest, you know, the way this went down with him, since there were no, development agreements were not in place when he started clearing his lot, that's not something that we could have used against him. And the agreement that was signed kind of to put things off really didn't have much of an enforcement mechanism built into it. So that wasn't super helpful either. But it's one of these things where it's as developers come up with new and crafty ways to try to get around things, you know, we have to come up with ways to lock it down, which is why the development agreements get longer and longer every year.
Okay. Peter, that's a good segue. Maybe it's time for us to vote on approving the development agreements.
Oh, well, I have one more question, Marla. I'm sorry, Dan Orff. So in this developer agreement, as I read through it quickly, Peter, there are things that he's already violated. So how, you know, basically, I don't know, violate is the right word. It's probably too strong a word. He has failed to comply with things that are written in here. So how does that jive up with things? Because according to this agreement, he should have done things. And now we're signing it retrospectively.
Well, I think at this point in time, as far as I know, he's done things out of order, but he's now brought the project into compliance.
Okay.
And so, yeah, he was in violation in the past, but, you know, we cited him. We did a cease and desist, and he's complied with that cease and desist in that he stopped doing work on the project, and he then approached us, and, you know, he's executed these agreements, and he also then did a whole bunch of other stuff over the last couple of weeks, you know, provided me with evidence of proper insurance and other items that are required in the development agreement in order for me to say, yeah, you're ready to move forward. At this point in time, you know, I think the two things he needs to do is he needs to, you know, get the well drilled and meet those well requirements, and he needs to post his financial security. Once those two things are done, I believe he is in compliance and we can move forward. Carol, tell me if I'm wrong, please.
I think she agreed.
Okay.
In my case, Peter, it was more about a timing inconsistency, meaning the way this is written, it indicates he will contact us, we'll do something, he'll check with us, and then he'll go and do something. And those things have already been done and before this agreement has been signed off of. That's the only
thing.
I have an issue from a syntax or whatever you want to say. If it's okay that we do that, even though we know that the steps are out of order, that's fine. I just wanted to say once, the steps are out of order.
Once the agreement is in place, that's when he's got to follow the agreement. Just anything he does before we enter into the agreement, we can't, unless the agreement says so, we can't retroactively apply the agreement to problems he's done in the past. Okay. So from this point moving forward, he needs to comply with the agreement.
All right. I think I understand what you're saying. Thank you.
Any other questions for Peter or Mark regarding the development agreement that's in front of us? Hearing none, we have a motion to basically approve the development agreement that's been put in front of us for the Sambrick development.
Chuck, does that need to be done as two separate motions, or can we do it in one?
You can approve them both, development agreement and the memorandum development agreement.
I'll approve the development agreement and the memorandum, and thank you, Peter, for making me stronger.
My pleasure.
So now, Marla Hexter made a motion to approve the development agreement as well as the memorandum of development agreement. Noelle, were you going about the second?
Or I can. No? I'll second.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I thought I cut you off.
No.
Okay. So Marla Hexter made the motion. Noelle seconds. Any other discussion? Again, thank you, Peter, for adding a lot to it and strengthening it. All in favor of approving, authorizing the Sambrick Development Agreement and Memorandum of Development Agreement, say aye.
Aye.
Any against? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
And that concludes my report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Peter. Okay. Township Board and Commission's reports, Planning Commission. Is that Phil?
Yes, the Planning Commission did not meet during the month of November. A conditional use hearing replaced our slot.
Great, thank you, Phil. I'll do the update for the comprehensive plan. We did meet in November, and we spent, actually had a very productive session working on our implementation table, where that's where we essentially try to assign the applicable parties for each of the major elements of the plan. We had a lot of good discussion, and I think we worked our way through it, and we're waiting to see. We haven't gotten anything back from our planner, John Miklos. But I believe, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, or though that was also shared, was that shared with the EAC already? Or we will, if we haven't, the plan is to share the implementation matrix, certainly with the other groups, boards, commissions, whatever you want to call them, within the township to make sure that they are adequately slated in for certain areas of the comprehensive plan, whether that happens, you know, the next month or two, or as part of the overall review process before it's adopted. But that, you know, the group, the comprehensive plan steering committee took their best shot at it with some other input from other attendees. But the idea here is to make sure that everybody has gotten a chance to look at it and are included in that process. Other than that, we had a brief discussion on, you know, public soliciting public comment, having a sort of a public presentation of the plan. Again, that will most likely happen as a virtual event. And we will be discussing that in greater detail at our upcoming meeting, which is on December the 10th. That's a Thursday, a week from this Thursday. And that is at 7 p.m., which is a change from our meet time that we've had going back earlier in the year at 7 p.m.
Chuck, if, that's whenever that's provided, I'll send it out to the board. I have not seen that.
I can ask John to give us an up, you know, okay, an updated matrix that has all the revisions.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, Park and Recreation Board.
Pam's here. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Mark already talked about the rain garden, but the Park Board would like to thank Mark and the Municipal Roads and Parks team for your support and the wonderful installation of the deer fence and the gate around the new rain garden. We took delivery, and within a week, they had it up, and it was a real pro job, so we really appreciate that. We have the as-built garden map now ready and the plant key for what's been put in there now, and that's been created, and we'll be able to move forward with future planning on what we do next with that rain garden. Also want to thank Mark for getting the dead and dying ash trees down at the Village Center Park. That was a significant safety hazard and an eyesore. And now we can move forward. Next year, an emphasis program for the Park Board will be recovering the canopy with our implementing our tree donation program and identifying a tree planting plan for both Village Center Park and also around Cuddy Dog Park and any other areas that we identify where we need additional canopy. The holiday tree at Village Center Park is lit. The old live tree was assessed for use this year. It had continued to deteriorate from prior years, and this year was heavily infested with bagworm. I had given it a spray with neem oil and picked worms off of it, but compounded by the fact that last year our tree team of Bill and Robin McGovern had to literally wire the strings on last year to make them stay on, and it was worse this year. We made the executive decision to nuke the tree. So there was another tree went down in Village Center Park, and the Christmas tree is no more. What is there now is a cut tree this year. It's been decorated for the holiday spirit, and that buys us time another year to assess what we want to put there and under controlled conditions replace that Christmas tree and get something nice in there that meets our aesthetic standards for holiday cheer. We have proceeded continue to proceed with the QR codes. Mark got, we sent you the invoice for the plant ID QR codes for Village Center Park Pollinator Gardens this week. They've all been ordered, and we are working on building, propagating the database for the QR codes and the information that's attached to all those things. They will be ready by the spring. And of course, any additional information can be added at any time, but it's going to be a pretty thorough description on each plant. I'm liking how it's falling together. And that's about it. Any questions?
Any questions for Pam? I don't see any. Pam, thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry you had to get rid of the old tree, but it does happen.
Well, it was the end of its useful life. It was really a good Charlie Brown tree, but we just didn't have the faith to keep it this year, and we felt like the neighborhood needed the holiday cheer that was a little more aesthetically pleasing than what was there. So.
Right. Well, I appreciate it. We always appreciate the effort of the park board.
Yeah, the decoration, the tree decorations look really nice. It's pretty at night. Thank you.
Mark and Robin do a good job on that. We got new LED lights this year, and they're just going well.
Great. Thanks again.
Thank you. Environmental Advisory Council, I guess it would be Ruth. Our next report.
Yep.
Hello again, everybody. The EAC met virtually via Zoom on Monday, November 23rd. The meeting started with a few announcements, the biggest of which is that Denise Finney cannot serve a second term on the EAC due to an overload of family and work-related tasks, COVID, another COVID casualty. Her term expires at the end of the year. And then the rest of the announcements were just the status of the sump pump below-grade structures and the prestige conditional use hearing, open space referendum, just brought the EAC up to speed on those things. The Tree Protection Working Group offered a letter that we talked about a little bit tonight. It summarizes the problems in following and enforcing the intent of tree protection standards. The memo requests legal advice from the township solicitor by way of the township manager and copied to the Board of Supervisors. We finalized its language and approved it unanimously. Basically, we have reached the limitations of our expertise in resolving what we see as a very important environmental issue. So thus, once again, we are reaching out for legal advice. Ross Snook was on hand again of New Hanover Township. He graciously delivered an informative work in progress training webinar to aid in our task of inventorying existing stormwater basins. The webinar is being created with grant money that Ross received. In exchange for the preview, the EAC agreed to offer feedback, and the working group will be gathered in person to learn more from Ross about best management practices that we should look for during our inventory. Denise Finney facilitated a brainstorming partnership with the students of Tristan Ashcross GIS class at Ursinus. And members of the EAC will be in a brainstorming meeting later this week to discuss the real world challenges and benefits of GIS mapping using the stormwater inventory as a case study. Brief mention was given to resources for the environmental considerations of solar farms, but some documentation that was sent in advance of the meeting for everyone to get prepared didn't go through properly, so that got tabled and hopefully will be on the agenda if time permits at the next EAC meeting. And then lastly, EAC member recruitment was encouraged as Denise's departure will leave us now with two vacancies, and she and her talents will be sorely missed. And that is my report.
Thank you, Ruth. Are there any questions for Ruth?
This is Marla, not a question, but just to clarify what you're asking for, and I think this has been a long time coming. is the next stage in this draft ordinance is for the solicitor to review it. So is that, that's what you're asking for us to approve now?
Yeah, they put together like a paper, not quite a draft ordinance, but just what they see, you know, needs to be looked at, and they would like the solicitor to review it.
And then put it into ordinance form? Are we there yet or not?
Well, I think it'll go back to what we were talking about earlier. I think it'll segue in back into the natural resources that Peter was talking about and some of the reforestation, that kind of stuff. So I think it'll all come back around.
Okay. Well, good timing.
Yeah.
Well, and to answer your question, Marla, it we are asking that the last the kind of what Chuck had said, almost, you know, post-mortem on what happened in Arcadia, we are wondering how it's basically questions of how do we fix certain aspects of SALDO. And the emphasis was on SALDO because that was the low-hanging fruit. And as Warren had mentioned, it was a favorable solution. But maybe now hearing from Peter tonight, it, you know, an entirely different approach may be necessary. But that those are the things that we're asking. So we're not at the stage yet where we can propose an ordinance because we don't know what needs to be fixed.
But I mean, it's a matter of passing along the letter to Peter for his review, right? Is that
correct?
I have no problem with that.
Okay.
But I'm not the board. I mean, let everybody else speak.
Well, do we have to vote or just not raise an objection?
Just not raise an objection.
Okay.
Well, I have no objection.
No objection.
No objection.
Okay, we'll pass it on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ruth. All right, that takes us to new business. There's a request. Mark, do you want to do this? Do you want me to do this? Or
Got a request from the board to put on a request for proposal for township engineer so we can begin that process where I put a RFP together that we'll then send out to the different engineer firms in the area and review the RFPs that we get back. And then we can proceed from there if that's the will of the board.
Right. So is there a motion?
I'll so move.
Well, makes a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Terry Bird seconds. Any further discussion or comments?
Just a quick comment. This is, from my point of view, we're sending out the RFP. That does not necessarily mean that there's anything wrong with our current engineer, and she's more than welcome to submit as well. I just want to make sure it's brought up in the same context as some of the other RFPs that we brought out there, just to make sure that we're doing our due diligence and checking things over periodically. So
thank you.
Hopefully that made sense what I just said.
No, we've all discussed and thought about it, and I don't agree with this initiative. I'm not going to debate it. You know where I stand. That's all I have to say.
Okay.
So, any more discussion? All in favor of authorizing Mark to do a request for proposal for put out a request for proposal or prepare the documents for request for proposal for a township engineer?
Aye.
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 Any against? Aye. So motion passes 4-1. It would be in favor would be Marla Hexter, Terry Bird, Noel Halter, Dan Orff, and against is Chuck Yizer.
Actually, Chuck, I didn't respond under either. I would actually
vote. Dan.
That's all right. I should have spoken up. I would vote. I would say nay, as opposed to aye.
Okay, so just I'll restate it for the record. So it's the vote passes 3-2. In favor were Marla Hexter, Terry Bird, and Noel Halter, and against were Chuck Yizer and Dan Orff. Great. Mark, you want to make the announcement for applicants for the various boards?
Yep. Again, Ruth segued into with Denise leaving. We have openings coming up in the 2021 timeframe for different boards. So if anyone is interested in serving on a township board or commission as a volunteer, we would welcome you to send in a letter of interest and a brief resume to myself at manager@lowerfrederick.org and what board you would like to volunteer for.
So this would be for all boards?
All boards, yeah, anyone. There's terms that are finishing on every board, or we have openings on the EAC and the park board at this time.
I mean, this is basically the same thing that pattern or path that we followed last year.
Yeah, it's every year. Every year this time of year, the boards, you know, we're looking for new people and, you know, see who wants to continue on.
Okay. And then do you or Marla want to talk about the opportunity to sign up for the newsletter?
Yep. Hold on a second. So again, we set up an e-newsletter for emails. If you want to receive emails from the township on the township homepage, if you go right to the homepage, you'll see on the right-hand side in the right column there, register now for Lower Frederick e-news. If you put your email into that, when we send out e-news, you will get that email. So we welcome everyone to register for that.
The only thing I wanted to add is you do have to put in who you are. That is, are you a resident? Do you work in Lower Frederick? And if it's neither, that's fine too. And the reason for that is there may be some Lower Frederick specific information that if you live in Philadelphia, you may not need to know that there's a road closed or electricity is out in the neighborhood. So that allows Mark to segment some of the information, and if it's not relevant to certain categories of people, then they won't get it.
So we can filter then off of what their preferences are, where they are.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Warren has a question.
Go ahead, Warren.
Got it. Sorry, I forgot to unmute myself. Yeah, the last time you brought this up, you had mentioned that there were some other avenues that you were going to get the word out. At that last meeting, were there only there were only 18 people. This time there's 23. But we need more than 23 people to know about this.
Yep. Correct.
So you're thinking about putting it up on the sign and
Facebook and
other places.
Yep.
Great. Thank you.
Yep, no problem.
Is there any other new business? Anybody in the board or Mark?
I have nothing.
Hearing none, then that brings us to public comment.
I do want to mention that our next meeting is on December 15th. Which is the third Tuesday, not the fourth Tuesday. Other than that, I don't have anything. I don't know. I have no hands, so.
Okay. adjournment. A motion to adjourn?
I'll make the motion.
Terry makes the motion. Marla, do you want a second?
Second.
Marla Hexter, second. All in favor? Aye. Aye. Good night.
Aye.
Have a good night.
Good night, everyone.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Good night. Yeah.